Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
Center for Spiritual Living. It's May 2nd, 2021. Yesterday was May Day. I was out working in the garden and a beautiful young lady pulled up on her bicycle with her mask on, bearing gifts. She had made me some blueberry muffins. It was Pam Hurdy. And it was one of those beautiful moments of surprise. When you least expect it, a beloved friend shows up with an open heart who came to check on my health, and I let her know that I'm all well. Thank you for your concern. Several of you texted or called, and I realized that my blood pressure was elevated because of an anxiety moment. And you'll be happy to know that it's 126 over 72 this morning. And that's unheard of for me. So I'm very happy and peaceful and grateful that when we don't run away from a scenario and we actually face it head on, it can be a beautiful opportunity for a shift in consciousness. My beloved Seamus asked me, are we as a species evolving? And with very little thought, I would have to say yes. Because as a gardener, I know that a garden has one simple principle. You either grow or you die. You either evolve or you perish. And so as I go out to my beautiful garden, it's not as big as Sylvia's, but it's humble and it's exquisite. I see what has evolved, what has thrived. And sometimes it's a weed that I don't cherish. But then I remember a weed is merely a plant whose virtue has not been identified yet. And so I smile at the potential weed and know that it has value somewhere else. And so I lovingly pull the weed and thank it for its great gift of life. And then I create space for another plant. Since I realize that everything is our practice, our mind is like a garden. And we plant seeds, affirmations, you might say. I was listening to Louise Hay this morning, who did a beautiful talk on how to love yourself. And she said, that's the most crucial thing that we could ever do, is to be gentle and loving with ourselves. But all too often what we do is we blame ourselves for something. Maybe we think that we are responsible for our animal's death. And then we live in a place called guilt, she says. And then we spiral in a devolutionary spiral into this place where we are literally abusing ourselves with our limited thoughts. So she says, when those toxic thoughts come into the garden of your mind, lovingly weed them out. No, that's not the truth for me right now. The truth is that I'm a loving mother to my dogs and my cats, and I do everything to nurture and support them. And so we take dominion over our consciousness, which is the only dominion really that we can maintain if we're fortunate enough. And so the world will try to scare us with their ideas, and some of us will buy into those fearful thoughts. I'm looking at a community that's all wearing their masks so respectfully, and yet I would venture to say that almost everybody here has had their shots. And so we're following the CDC guidelines to be respectful. I have my mask right here, which I will don as soon as I finish this little talk that I'm doing. And so grateful for the evolution of consciousness that I truly feel is happening within our planet. You know, I feel that we have a kinder, gentler country. under a new leadership right now. I can feel it. I watched the president's address after 100 days with so much concern for our planet, for our environment, for all people of all walks of life. Could we know that we are evolving into a place where all life is sacred? I truly feel that that is happening on our planet right now. And you know, we teach in the science of mind, if you can see it in your mind, you can manifest it in the world. So could we see a world that works for everyone? Use your imaginal realm. You know, see us loving one another. Louise Hay quoted Jesus, who said, to love your neighbor as yourself. And then she says, as yourself is probably the biggest phrase there, because you and your neighbor are not separate. So could we have this inclusive way of being with each other in the world? Huh? Maybe your neighbor is the old tree that needs to be tended. I have bark beetles in my big old maple in the backyard. I noticed when Adam cut a branch off, the beetles were in the tree. And so rather than euthanize the tree, which some might say would be the right thing to do, I've been treating the tree and treating the bark and talking to her and putting my hands on her, because she is my own self. I was sharing with those earlier that my beloved Bertram is very close to the end of his life, and he is so sacred to me. Part of me exists within him and him within me. And so this morning he was trapped under the armoire, and Trey had to pull him out from the armoire, had to lift him up onto his legs. He's 112 in human years. He can waddle out the backyard, and he went to the big old tree that I just spoke about, Hermione, the big one in the backyard, and he lay under the tree at 5 a.m. And when I got up at 6, he was still under the tree. I went outside, and I lay down on the ground next to him, and I told him I loved him. He's so skinny now, and I rubbed his ears. He likes his ears to be played with, and I kissed him on the face, and around 7 a.m., he got up, and he waddled back to the back door, and I carried him up the steps. And so I'm experiencing this beautiful dynamic with a beloved part of my own self. And I have to work on my own mind, not to create blame and guilt and all this sort of narrative in my head, but to see it as a sacred dance and to honor his journey, honor his process, as well as Trey's and my own process. So could we see all of life as this intimate exchange of energy where we seek to be as loving as we can be? This month, I'm going to be speaking about something very intimate to my own soul, which is called the art of being. My beloved Susan Jackson sent me a photograph of Jane Stearns, this angel that was at the center for a very long time. And Jane would come to class on Wednesday mornings, and Bert and Speck would come to class, and Humphrey. And Bert has always been kind of fragile. And she sent me a photograph of Bert lying on the sofa and Jane sitting there, and his head on her lap, which he very rarely did because he's a private kind of a dog. And his head was on her lap, and she was stroking him. And I realized that she was practicing the art of being loving, and yet she was doing what anybody would do to another being who needs love. So she was doing her being, and her being was love. And so this month, I invite you to explore who we are, because who we are is what we give to the world. Emerson says, what you are speaks so loudly, I don't hear a thing you say. I pulled out my Emerson because he talked about be and not seem. Be this divine presence that you are. And don't appear how the world wants you to appear to be acceptable to the world. No, he says, be and not seem. And then he says, let us acquiesce. In other words, surrender to this something that we all share, this divine intelligence, this divine love. Let us acquiesce. He says, get our bloated nothingness out of the way. That's those nattering nabobs of negativity, Terry. Get that bloated nothingness out of the way. And he says, when we do, we connect with the divine circuits. So what if it's that simple? It's just to be the love that we are, to be the peace that we are, to be the consciousness that sees possibilities unfolding at a time when you think everything's been exhausted. No. Ernest Holmes himself calls the universe the totality of possibilities. So could we open to the possibility of a kinder, gentler world where we're awake to our interconnectedness and all of life is sacred? I believe we can, because if that idea is awakening in me, it's awakening within the consciousness. And if you're here and you're hearing these words, or if you're in virtual land and you're hearing them and they resonate with you, that's because those ideas are already there. They're like seeds that are germinating in the garden of your soul. And that's what we all are. We're an eternal soul, which is having a temporary, in our case, human experience. And yesterday afternoon, when Bert waddled out to the back, and he saw the neighbor Chris was over there, and he loves Chris, and he rallied his 112 years, and he got a little bit of a prance on, and he went over to Chris. He'd do the same with Al. If any of you want to stop and see him, I remember Jane Stearns came over when I said, I think Bert's leaving the planet. She came over, she was a block away where she lived. She walked in the kitchen and he got up from the floor and he pranced, as much as you can call it a prance now, he pranced over to her and I said, Jane, you saved his life. So what if something as simple as a loving presence can really affect each one of us? And we get to be responsible, the ability to respond to those that perhaps need that kind look. Al stayed with Bert when we went up to Christmas in Maine because the plans had been made. And again, I didn't know if he would live. And Al stayed at the house. He even slept with the pug. And I think he slept with somebody else, too, at the same time. But this is what's required when you're at my house. They're like our children, and they're all our children. So what if this month we can practice the art of being this divine loving presence that we are, and then see where it takes us in the world? Then our doing will come from our being. And you know, there's a wonderful phrase that says, the way you do anything is the way you do everything. So if you do things mindfully, if you do things kindly, if you do things gently, you're probably that way with everything in your world. If you do things flippantly and resentfully and bitterly and angrily, you probably do that with things in the world. So what if we could say, I'm going to change the way I am in a way that I enjoy and like, and then see what unfolds in the body of my experience? Wow. There's a whole new me, and then there'll be a different outcome in the world. So could we explore that? And this Sunday, I love what the title of the talk is, You Are God's Seedling. You are God's seedling. Now, that wasn't my idea. That was an idea of Meister Eckhart, the 13th century mystic. He said, the seed of God is planted within all beings. And he said, our job is to let that seed of God sprout within us, put down roots into the truth, and then flower and bear fruit as our experience. Again, a beautiful metaphor. And then Meister Eckhart said, just as the pear seed becomes the pear tree, and the acorn becomes the oak tree, he says the God seed becomes the God in the world. So could we be humble enough to know that we are divine beings? And then I hear the eighth psalm that says, what is man that thou art mindful of him? Thou hath created him a little lower than the angels, and hath crowned him with honor and glory. And so when I hear those beautiful words, I realize that we are here to honor and glorify the divine. Even Ernest Holmes says we were created for the delight of God. Well, how is God going to delight in itself if it can't delight in its creation? It says in the Quran, I was a hidden treasure. This is the divine again. And I longed to be known, so I created this world. So this divine presence longs to be known, and it becomes a Tia and a Shay and an Al and a David and a Judy. Not so that it's about us as personalities, but it's about this presence that wants to express and reveal its inner splendor, its hidden treasure, its beauty. And each one of us is that. And when you really feel into that, well, then we get less caught up in trying to appear a certain way in the world and really seek to be the authentic self that this divine presence intended all along. I want to jump into an old, old piece of paper that I found as a bookmark in this book. It's from an essay called Self-Reliance. Look how brown this paper is. I mean, and I only have two pieces of it left. And it's one of my all-time favorite essays in Self-Reliance. I read it in ninth grade. So this is Emerson speaking about this divine spark that's within us all. And he talks about Plato and Moses and Milton. And he says, these men spoke not about what other men thought, but they had flashes across their mind and within their heart, like the luster of a firmament. And this is where they absolve you to yourself, absolve you to this divine intelligence that's awakening within, and don't rely on the teachings of others. This is how he starts. And he says, and we shall be forced to take, He says, we but half express ourselves. The whole damn thing's underlined. So we but half express ourselves, and are ashamed of that divine spark which each of us represents. That divine idea was his word, that each of us represents. So could we access what that divine idea is for yourself? And then he says, God will not have his work made manifest by cowards. It takes a hell of a lot of courage to be your authentic self. He said it needs a divine individual to exhibit anything that's divine. Now, could we be humble enough to know that we're spiritual beings and we're having a human experience? When Bert waddled over to the neighbors yesterday to see Chris, they all came out from the house. The parents were visiting, the wife came out, and Bert went from person to person to person, and then he just fell on the ground and lay there, lying in the sun. And they looked at me like, is it? And I said, you know what? He's happy. He's experiencing the community of love. And after a little while, I picked him up, put him on his legs, and he wouldn't move. And so I said, Chris, everywhere you are, he wants to go. So would you walk over to my house? And then, and sure enough, Bert waddled over and followed Chris back. See, that was the divine spark in me, saying, you got to get creative when you got a 112-year-old dog. And then Emerson says, trust thyself. He said, every heart vibrates to that iron string. And he says, accept the place that the divine providence has found for you. Divine Providence put me in Huntsville, Alabama, thanks to Judy Graff and Jack Albright. They convinced me that this was the place for me, and I haven't regretted it in 33 years. So trust it. Trust thyself. The divine providence will put you where you need to be. And then he says, great individuals have always done so, and they've confided themselves childlike to the genius of their own age. When Seamus asked me if we've evolved, look how much we've evolved since 1840. I mean, we had slavery when this was written. We have evolved. So we confide ourselves with childlike genius to the age that we're in, betraying their perception that this eternal was stirring in their hearts and was working through their hands, predominating in all of their beingness. There was this divine something that was moving through their beingness at whatever time in history they found themselves. So could we have that same self-reliance? And you know, when he says self-reliance, an ego would think that's being reliant on David Leonard, myself. No, no, it's being reliant on the self that we all share, the big S. You know, it's that presence that we all breathe into and out from. And we all share that. So could we explore what that would feel like? We did a beautiful journey this Wednesday in Satsang where we became the soil. Jake reminded me of that. And not only were did we get an opportunity to be the soil, but I found myself as the soil, as the context in which all life arises. And so I found myself as the soil, feeling the roots of the tree. But just like Jake, I also felt myself being the leaf of the tree drinking in the sunlight. And I felt the rain moving, and I wasn't separate from the rain. And it was all some kind of a strange merging with this bigger something. And then I suggested before we did the journey that we go to the anima mundi, the soul of the world. And so Glory G and her rattles and drums, after we became the soil, we moved to the core of the earth and we merged with the soul of the world. Well, by then, my context was so huge, I didn't know who I was. So when I came back into David, I thought, well, that's an aberration. Does this thing really even exist? Once you've felt the sky, it's hard to step into a cloud. Once you've felt the ocean of love, it's hard to identify with the drop in the ocean. And so what if that's the opportunity at whatever stage of our own evolution, our own awakening, is to discover this invisible something that we all share? We did our final projects this week in our class, and everybody was spectacular. And oh, by the way, the new class will be starting on May 11th and 12th. That's a Tuesday night and a Wednesday morning. And we're going to be doing Parker Palmer's incredible book, On the Brink of Everything. It truly speaks to my soul. It's about grace, getting older, and gravity. And he says, gravity is going to affect all of us. Trust me, climbing up and down those stairs, carrying a dog, is not as easy as it was when I was younger. But he said, sometimes we fall down, that may be gravity, or getting older, but then the grace is always getting up. And knowing that the universe will provide us with whatever it needs in order for it to move ahead. So that's going to be, and there's a sign-up sheet in the other room, or you can just let me know and Jody Rutenberg will put you on a list. And we're going to do this class on Zoom. I think this may be the last one, and then I'm hoping to get back in normal sometime, maybe this summer at the center, where once we get herd immunity, we can we can see how this thing works in the new normal, whatever a new normal is in this world. So in reflecting on you are God's seedling, I reminded of Jesus who spoke. They all pointed to this thing that Emerson pointed to, the spark that Meister Eckhart spoke about, this God seed that's within us. So could we, Jesus called it the kingdom of heaven that's within. And he says, seek it first and everything is added unto you. Then Jesus later in the Gospel of Thomas said, the kingdom of heaven is spread out upon the earth. But most people don't see it. So then you can, if you're deductive like me, well, how can it be within and all around? And the answer Seamus would say is yes, it is within and it's all around. Because, and we're all part of that. So that's that God seed that's everywhere revealing itself in the world. Now, can you imagine what kind of an environmental program we would have when we thought everything was sacred, where the water is sacred and the earth is sacred and the trees are sacred? It would be a whole different thing. We wouldn't be out there harvesting the trees willy-nilly just because we want to get rich. We would see the sacredness of the land and the sacredness of the animals, those that are going extinct all over the planet. That hurts my heart. And then I realize I can get caught up in the idea that I'm the doer and I got to fix the world. Or I could instead raise the consciousness of the individuals. And once the consciousness is raised, we wouldn't even consider harming the other because we would realize it's our own self that we would be harming. And it all has to be an inside out job. When we evolve in consciousness, we're no longer going to act the way we used to. Isn't that the beautiful gift of awakening? So Jesus called it the kingdom of heaven. In Buddhism, they called it the Buddha consciousness, the one that awakens. And then later on, when you found the Apostle Paul, who never met Jesus, who had the conversion experience on the road to Damascus, and he saw the light, he realized that it wasn't about Jesus at all. It was about the Christ presence. And so Paul would say, let the Christ be in you, which was in him. So again, we're pointing to something within that we all share. You can call it the Christ consciousness. You can call it the Buddha consciousness. You can call it Homo Universalis, which is what Barbara Marx Hubbard called it. Teilhard de Chardin called it the Christification of humanity. It matters not what we call it. What does matter is that we put our hands on our heart and we begin to just taste it, feel into it. In the lovely class we did at Pema Chodron's, her whole practice was so damn simple, I just have to share it with you. She says, enter in the present moment, number one. Put your hand on your heart. And then act. This is the moment the Lord has made. I don't care. The dog fell on the floor. Okay. Put your hand on your heart. Oh, you sweet dog. And then you act. It's that simple. It's that simple. In everything, in everything. It only takes one moment to shift consciousness. Now, we can stay in the garden filled with weeds, Terry, and we can start growing those weeds. In fact, we can cultivate weeds. We can cultivate stinking thoughts and worried thoughts and condemning thoughts and angry thoughts and blaming thoughts and guilty thoughts. I've been there, done that. But I choose not to do that anymore. Ernest Holmes says, you cannot live a choiceless life. In every moment we are choosing. Choose you this day who you will serve. Are you going to serve your problem or are you going to serve this divine loving presence? Are you going to serve this sense of being one with the universe? Or are you going to serve this problem that you've so identified that really creates a lot of tension and anxiety? And then you're like me, you go to the doctor and they give you a little pill and your blood pressure goes down because it was anxiety after all that I was experiencing. Boy, could that be a wake-up call? Could life be a wake-up call for all of us? You know, then it's a beautiful gift every day when you see your own obstacle was you. You know, I found the problem to the problem. It was me all along. And when I stopped identifying as a problem and saw it was an opportunity, a threshold for a change of the way I was being, well, then I no longer resisted my mother when she would call and push all my buttons. My husband had this beautiful saying. I say, you know, she pushes all my buttons. And then he laughingly said, that's because she installed them. And then I found myself laughing a little bit. And I just created that little bit of a distance from the reaction and the resistance. And then, you know, after a while, I could just realize this is the planet that she's on. I may not be on that planet right now. And my mother was concerned, you know, she was concerned about my sexual orientation. So that was never a subject when someone would say, is David married? Well, what business is it of theirs if he's married? They would ask, David was valedictorian. What is he doing for a living? Well, what business is it what he's doing for a living? She didn't approve of this religion that I was involved with. And so she would never tell them that I was a minister because she'd have to explain what this religion was, which is really not a religion. It's more of a spiritual teaching. And yet, you know what? I loved my mother with all her foibles. The last time I saw her, She was 78, 79 years old. We flew her into Vancouver, British Columbia. We picked her up at the airport. And I said, let's take a nice walk through Stanley Park, this beautiful park right on the ocean. And she said, oh, Scott, I can't breathe. I can't breathe, Scott. I need to sit down and have a cigarette. I said, Mom, you can't breathe and you want to sit down and have a cigarette? Oh, Scott, stop lecturing me. Stop lecturing me. So we sat down. She pulled out her cigarettes and the homeless guy came over to her. You want a cigarette? She said. He took a cigarette. She said, oh, keep the pack. And then she said, do you need a light? And I said, Mom, you haven't changed at all. And you know, that's my mother. And I love her and she's still with me. And the one great thing that she transmitted to me was that she was always loving. She says, people are touch deprived. And so I would go to the nursing home where she worked, and she always would have her arms around the patients. She would say, so many of them don't have anybody that visits them. And so I learned that gift from her, the gift of that everybody is your family, and that everybody needs that love. And people need to be touched, you know. Animals need to be touched. So if you want to come over and touch Bert, hold him in your arms, you've got an invitation. So let me tell you how Mark Nepo talks about this divine spark. This is a man who had cancer twice, and life kind of beat him down, took away everything that was solid, and in that, the divinity awoke. He has a way of putting it like a poet does that really touched my heart. He says, eventually, all the love and all the suffering and the humility that we go through in life wear away our walls of resistance until spirit begins to shine from within us like an inner sun. Huh. So what we are light beings. Now, you know, all the great teachings have told that. Jesus says, don't put your light under a bushel, but let it shine. The Buddha says, be a light unto the world. So could we access, in the very beginning of the Bible, it says, first words of the Bible, in the beginning God, and darkness was on the face of the earth, and God said, let there be light. And the word that was used in the very first sentence of the Bible was Shekinah, and that's the light within. So could we know that we're light beings? And like, and when life wears you down and we know ourselves as spiritual beings, then it begins to shine through. When Bert was lying on the driveway of the neighbors yesterday and they're all circling around him thinking there was something wrong, I said, you know, they said, you're going to really miss Bert. I said, but you know, I'm one of the old school people that believe that Bert is a spiritual being and he's having a dog experience right now, but the spirit that he is will never die. I've got so many on the other side that are still with me. So could we find that spirit and let it shine even if we're a cancer survivor or whatever? So here's how he goes on to say, this is how spirit is revealed on earth. As the coverings that we carry are worn away by life, then the light that we carry can pour into the world. Huh. Paul is still here. His light is still shining. Joe's still shining. I see him in Sylvia's. Where would he go? You know, he's a spiritual being. So could we find that light? He says, our constant challenge then is to accept how life wears away what doesn't matter until the miracle of life is revealed in everything. It's all the miracle of life. Sometimes the painful stuff is the best stuff. It's the best stuff. Oh, David, that's crazy. How can you call the painful stuff the best stuff? Well, sometimes it needs some really painful things for us to change. You know, when your lover walks out on you, as mine did at age 21, I was devastated. Best thing that ever happened to me. Took me a long time to get over it. But had that not happened, I wouldn't be the person I am. You know, I was supposed to be an attorney. Can you imagine how devastating that would have been on my life? Didn't happen. Then I was going to be a dancer. Didn't happen. And it all brought me to this crazy teaching where I'd sit in the back of the room and I was transforming through hearing what was being said up here, and what was really happening was something was awakening in here. So what if this is the potential? You're really hearing something that you already know, even when Mark Nepo speaks. So he said, our work is to let the light of spirit come through, never thinking that we own this spirit, but letting it use us to brighten and warm the hearts of others. To let your light so shine that you brighten the hearts of others. To bring your smile to the party. I'm going to Gigi's 90th birthday party this afternoon. And all I'm going to do is let my little light shine and tell her how much she's loved. And hopefully stay away from some people. No, this is the purpose of the human journey. To live openly and honestly until we become a source of uncovered light. And then life pours forth to renew us and all that we meet. I'll read that line again. So this is the purpose of our human journey, to live openly and honestly until we become a source of this uncovered light. Huh. To let your light shine. Then light pours forth to renew us and to all that we meet. Wow, is it that simple? Yeah, it's just that simple. Be a light unto yourself, be a light unto the world. To find that Shekinah within. To look through the eyes of an illuminated consciousness instead of a dark and gloomy belief system. You know? Are we as a species going to evolve? Well, you know, as Barbara Marx Hubbard said, we either evolve or we perish. And so next week, I'd love that I do my talk titles a couple months in advance. I'm going to speak about resolve to evolve. Could we make it our intention that I am going to grow into my true nature, and I'm going to let whatever doesn't serve me anymore fall away, the masks that don't work anymore fall away. After a while, you get so you can't wear a fake mask and put this pretense for others. You have to be who you are. I remember Bernie Siegel, he got an honorary doctorate of religious science when I was in the Atlanta church 35 years ago. And Bernie Siegel said, be who you is and not who you ain't. Because if you ain't who you is who you ain't. And if you is who you ain't who you is. Now, that was so poorly said, but I said it makes a point. We have to be who we are. And who we are is a divine presence. We are the light of the world. You are the light of the world. Remember Jesus Christ Superstar and Godspell? You are the light of the world. I remember that song. I was in that musical. So could we find that place that's within us? And I was asking, you know, if we're going to be a seedling of God, what would God be? And I thought of the omnis. God is omnipresent, omniscient, omniactive. What are the other omnis? Omnipotent, all-powerful. So what if this something that we are is always there? It's the most powerful thing that we could express. It's the most knowing thing that we have. It's not an intellectual knowing. Knowing doesn't come from the intellect. That's where thinking arises. And thinking is a very valuable trait. I'm very smart. But knowing comes from this G-N-O-S-I-S, you know. It just knows. Something that knows within us, you know. Someone wanted me to join the Masonic Temple. And I said, I don't think a gay New Thought minister would be accepted at the Masonic Temple. And then it was Stephen Gilbert. He's Jewish. And he says, you know, David, all they need to know is that you believe in God. I said, well, there you have it. I don't believe in God. You don't believe in God and you're a minister? I said, no, I know that there is a presence. It's not a belief. All belief comes from the ego. I don't believe in really much of anything. But I do know that there is this presence that I can rely on, that holds me. I know that there is this love and this peace and this light and this awake intelligence. Jake knows the same thing I know, but it's not a brain thing. Well, he didn't like that answer and it kept me out of the Masonic Lodge, so I'm grateful for that. So you get to discover what it is, you know. And when you come here on Sunday mornings, don't think that I'm coming here to teach you anything, because I'm not. What I'm really hoping to do is to awaken the beginner's mind in you. And that's the mind that says, I don't know, but I'm curious and I'm fascinated. And then the willingness to look within and discover. It's always a discovery. And it's funny, every moment is rich with the potential of an awakened moment. Every single moment. I remember we had someone gave the church these pews. It was Gene Hammons and Bruce Boucher, and they were cleaning out their place, and they had two pews. They thought maybe it would make us respectable. So these two big wooden brown pews came to the center. And so being that I was not fond of pews from my childhood, maybe there was a little stuff there, we painted them a different color, and they were still pews in my world. So finally I got creative, and I asked Tia, and I asked Jane Stearns, and I asked Phyllis Blaha, could you paint bunny rabbits and foxes and flowers? And so after a while, those pews, which I had condemned, all of a sudden transformed into this piece of art. And every time I look at them, they make me smile. So what if that's one of the ways that we can deal with what life gives us? And then, what is it? You turn the lemons into lemonade, or maybe a lemon meringue pie, and you don't bemoan the fact that it was once a pew. She's had her redemption now. So Mark Nepo wrote a poem, and the poem is, I call it the God Seed. But he calls it the one thing. And see if this can evoke an awareness of this God within you. And from this, I'd like to do a little closing meditation. I always look for something that kind of, you know, artists and poets, they speak a language of the soul. And when the soul is triggered, the soul perceives things not logically and intellectual with a bunch of haves and yeses and buts and this and the state. No, that's all intellect and ego. The soul sees things almost in images. That's why metaphors are so powerful. And so here's the little metaphor that he gives about the one thing that we all possess. He said, there is this one thing. I can't remember and I can't quite find. On gray days like today, I worry that I've misplaced it or maybe that my memory is failing. But on days like today, when everything is swelling with life, I'm certain it's always been this way. To sense such a thing without finding it is what keeps us reaching for each other. I'm coming to believe it's not about finding anything at all. It's more about the treasures that we discover by opening what seems to be in the way. And whatever we find, well, that is what we've been looking for. There is this one thing I can't remember and I can't quite find. And on gray days, I worry that I've misplaced it or my memory is failing. But on days like today, when everything is swelling with life, I'm certain that it's always been this way. To sense such a thing without finding it is what keeps us reaching for each other. I'm coming to believe it's not about finding anything at all. It's more about the treasures we discover by opening to what seems to be in the way. And whatever we find is actually what we've been looking for. And so I'd invite you to notice what's kind of in the way for you right now. For me, it's my old dog that's challenged. And to let that thing that seems to be in the way to be the threshold of an opening, perhaps for light to shine, for love to be remembered, for a radical sense of knowing that all is well all the time, even when the appearance doesn't seem that way. Notice this thing that he spoke about, that we all have, this God seed within our being, this spark, the divine, this light, this peace that passes all understanding, this awakened sense of knowing that is there behind your thinking patterns. This radical acceptance of life just as it is, without any resistance. And rest as that. A friend of mine said they're going to write a book called Standing in the Heart of God. And I said, when you say that, I would rather rest in the heart of God. And then she said, well, standing serves my purpose. And I said, resting serves mine. So find your way of standing, resting, walking, dancing, being the God seed that you are. And then wait upon the Lord, as they say in the Bible, or as we would say in Science of Mind, wait upon the law. Because love leads the way and the law makes the way possible. So could we trust, as Emerson said, trust thyself. Trust that there is a passageway of insight that flashes across the heart and mind when we open to it, when we consider that it's always been doing this from the time we were a small child to this mature time in our adulthood. There is this divine presence that has been seeking our attention. And now we're taking time to listen, to look deeply, and to say, yes, use me. This life belongs to you. And then perhaps there's an element of surprise when we find ourselves doing something so strange, like chasing after a white dog with blue eyes who ran away from home, only to realize that she shows up at our doorstep all along, once we stop chasing her. Life truly is such a blessing with all of its challenges. And perhaps the challenges are here for us to evolve and grow through. And without those challenges, we would be kind of a boring person. And so we find ourselves saying, this too is good, and this too is of God, and I demand to see the blessing. And maybe the blessing is a realization that we're spiritual beings having a human experience. And in that awakened perception, death seems like an imposter. What could die? Spirit was never born. And so then we smile at death, which is just like taking off a shoe that no longer fits. And what was in that shoe is that life eternal, and that's what we all are. So by going to the God seed of our being, we discover that this God seed is everywhere. It's not mine, I can't possess it. It's within all creation. And when I find that God seed within me awakening, well, that God seed sees itself everywhere reflected in the world. And then I say to the world, you are the face of God. I hold you in my heart. You are a part of me. You are the face of God. All there is the face of God smiling back at us. The infinite presence lies stretched in smiling repose, while our finite self wails and suffers and creates all the chaos. And right at the core is this divine love smiling, reminding us who we are. And we rest in the heart of God. We stand in the heart of God. We do in the heart of God. Because we are the love of God revealed here on earth. Take a deep breath and give a sigh for the divine. Ah, and say, I have arrived. I am home. If you would, put your hands over your heart. And join with me in the heart salutation. Let's say to this spark of divinity within us, this God seed, I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I love you.
You are the deepest aspect of myself.
The beloved in me bows to the beloved in you.
In this space we are one. So we raise our heads, we open our eyes, we open our hands, and we let our light so shine that it takes the darkness and turns it into beautiful revelations of spirit. So thank you all. Happy birthday, Gigi. Thanks for sending in your tithes. Masks on.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.